Thank you very much, and good evening, everybody. Appreciate that very warm welcome, and it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to learn and teach Torah together with you all this evening. B'chol atar v'atar, wherever everybody finds themselves, I understand that I'm speaking tonight to a fairly global audience. So the topic, as we've already heard, the topic that I want to discuss is the status of Mechallelei Shabbat, Shabbat desecrators, in the current context. And the reason why I chose this topic in particular is because it's interesting from two perspectives. It's interesting from a straightforward halachic perspective. I want to know what the halacha is. I want to know what the din is as far as Mechallelei Shabbat are concerned. The halachic implications, whether I can count them towards a minyan, whether I can drink the wine that they touch, whether I can eat the food that they cook, etc., etc. So that's one reason why I want to look at this this sugya. I need to know the halacha. The second reason why I chose to learn this sugya with you this evening is because it's very interesting in terms of the development of halacha over the course of the past 200 years or so. And it's interesting to see how various poskim, or as perhaps we would say this evening, posakim would say, that, you know, how they've approached this issue in response to changing sociological conditions. Very often we talk about contemporary halachic issues. Indeed, in my own shul, I give a weekly shiur on contemporary halachic issues, and I've spoken many times in many contexts about contemporary halachic issues. And one of the observations that I often make is that what is it that makes something a contemporary issue rather than a timeless issue? You know, many halachic issues are timeless. Whether or not I have to repeat Yalev Yavo or repeat Birkat HaMazon if I missed out Yalev Yavo is a timeless question. That's not a contemporary question. What makes something a contemporary question? So it's either something which is new technologically, heart transplants, for example, organ donations. These are things that didn't exist 100 years ago. So it's a contemporary halachic issue, or sometimes it's a changed sociological context, which turns it into being a contemporary issue. In terms of there's nothing mechanically new in the situation, but it's the environment in which we find ourselves, which is going to define this as being a contemporary issue rather than necessarily a timeless issue. And what we're going to see is that this is very much a contemporary issue, and the posukim have responded to the challenges of the era or the eras in different ways. And one states this with caution, but I think this is often true in a halachic context. Sometimes one can approach matters from an entirely clinical perspective without having an end goal in mind. And in other instances, the halachic decisors might well have an end goal in mind. And what they're looking for is to see if they can marshal sufficient sources to support their journey towards that end goal. And I would suggest that in this case, both for those who take a stringent approach and for those who take a lenient approach, that both parties or both camps, in actual fact, have to a large degree an end goal in sight. So that much is by way of introduction. And I want to start actually not with the very first source on the Daf Makorot, which you should be able to see, but the fourth source, which is from the Shulchan Aruch Orach Chaim Simon Shin Pei Hei. This is in Hilchot Eruvin. So the specifics of the halacha Ruvin are not particularly important to us at present. It's to do with the notion of what we call Schirat Rashut or Bittul Rashut. If you've got an area in which Jews and Gentiles alike are resident. The Shulchan Aruch there tells us that Yisrael Mumar Avodat Elilim or Lechalel Shabbatot Beparhesia, that a Jew who is a Mumar, that is usually translated as being an apostate, a Jew who has abandoned Judaism and has become an idolater or a Shabbat desecrator, Afilo Enu Mechalelo Ela Beisod Rabbanan, even if they are transgressing Shabbat, breaking Shabbat only as far as rabbinic prohibitions are concerned, Harehu Ka'akum, such a person has the status of a Gentile. If the person only desecrates Shabbat in private, but not in public, even if they desecrate Shabbat on a biblical level, they've got the status of a Jew for all matters, and with Atel Rashut, and therefore in the context of Hilkot Eruvin, they can be Mevatel Rashut, they can say that their Rashut, their territory within the Eruv is subsumed by everybody else's. So what we see from this passage in Shulchan Aruch is that a Mechalel Shabbat Befarhesia, somebody who publicly desecrates Shabbat, has the status of an idolater, status of a Gentile. Bittul Rashut, as far as an Eruv is concerned, is not a matter that comes up all the time, but certain other matters definitely do. If we look in Orach Chaim Siman Nun Heis, if you'd Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, Avarian Shavar Gzeirat HaTzibor Shavar Avira, a transgressor who transgresses in whatever way it might be, Imloni Duhu, if they haven't been excommunicated, Nimnele Minyan Asara, they can be counted towards a Minyan for Tefillah. So you have a person who perhaps is ochel nevelot at trefot, person who doesn't keep kosher, so they can still be counted towards a minyan. If we look in the Mishnah Brura, his comments there, the Mishnah Brura says, katav ha-pri megadim davka aveira shavar l'teavon. So we're only talking about, a person who is transgressing because they've got a tither to eat non-kosher food. They're not transgressing as an act of calculated rebellion against the Almighty. They're transgressing because they have a Yetzer Hara. They're transgressing because eating the Big Mac or whatever it is more important to them at this point in time than keeping the laws of the Torah. But they aren't saying that they totally disregard the laws of the Torah. Aval lahachis, but if on the other hand they are abandoning mitzvot as an act of rebellion, then even if it's just with one matter, or that they've converted, apostatized to idolatry, or they've become a public Shabbat desecrator, then they've got the din of an akum, and they don't count towards a minyan. So we're seeing that in a halachic sense, we're saying that a person who is a Shabbat desecrator doesn't count towards a minyan. Such a person is regarded as an akum l'chol davar. They're regarded as a Gentile as far as this is concerned. Now, obviously, this is a challenging halachic situation in many contexts. If one lived back in Vilna 250 years ago, or Algiers possibly only 150 years ago, then people knowing that if they break Shabbat publicly, they will have the status of being an akum, and essentially they won't be able to participate in Jewish religious life, that very often had a disincentive effect and prevented people from breaking Shabbat. Bavonotenu harabim, unfortunately nowadays, we find ourselves living in an environment and an era where Chilul Shabbat is very, very widespread. Indeed, in some communities outside of the major centres, you'll have entire shuls and communities, batei kenesiot, where almost nobody is Shabbat observant for one reason or another. If we were to take this statement of the Mishnah Brura and other poskim as the final word on the matter, then we would find that in certain communities outside of the major centres, then essentially they might be having services on Shabbat, they might even have a daily minyan, but it seems that everything is batel u'mevutal, and that everything is halakhically meaningless, because you've got 200 Jews in the synagogue, none of whom have the halakhic status of being Jewish. They have the halakhic status of being ka'akum, of being like an idolater. There's some discussion whether they are idolaters or they're like idolaters. It doesn't make any difference. You haven't got a minyan asara there. You don't have a minyan of people there. The disincentive factor is entirely absent. Standing up from the pulpit in front of the Aron HaKodesh and announcing that we have a major problem here. Everybody is Mechalel Shabbat. We don't have a minyan. We can't continue with the service. It's not going to have the effect of Ezra HaSofer speaking to the Jewish people in exile. It's just going to disenfranchise people from any association with Orthodox Judaism. So how one should proceed necessitates us to learn through the entire sugya and start off by asking ourselves, where do we get this halacha from, that Mechalel Shabbat v'farhesya is like an akum? So for this, we need to look at the first source on our handout. This is Gemara in Masechet Chulin, talking about issues of korbanot. Again, the specifics and the context aren't important to us this evening, but the Gemara cites a brighter. It says, Meitive mikem, we talk about bringing korbanot, and korbanot are offered mikem, from amongst you. Mikem, and we understand that to mean from some of you, but not kulchem, but not everybody is able to bring a korban. Lotziet hamashumad, that excludes somebody who is a Meshumad, or older texts of the Gemara, which were redacted by the censors, say a Mumar, but a person who's an apostate can't bring a Korban. Mikem, Bachem chilakti v'lo b'umot. So this applies to you, to the Jewish people, doesn't apply to the Umot Ha'olam. Umot Ha'olam, anybody can bring a Korban. Minha behema, and you bring this korban min ha-behema, from the animals, and that includes people who are, in a spiritual sense, compared to animals. And mikan amru mekablin korbanot miposhei Yisrael, k'dei she'yachzruhu behem b'tshuva. In actual fact, we accept korbanot from sinners, Jewish sinners. Why? Because even though there could be theological and theoretical grounds for pushing them away, we actually want Kadesh Yachzru Bahem B'Tshuva. We want them to repent. We want to open the gates of accessibility to them. We want to allow them to engage in Jewish religious life so that they should improve their ways, correct their ways. Chutz min ha-meshumad u'menasechet ha-yayin u'menchalal Shabbatot b'farhesya. With the exception of an apostate, a person who pours libations of wine for Avodah Zarah, and Mechalel Shabbatot b'farhesya, a person who desecrates Shabbat in public. Why a Meshumad and a Menasechet Hayayin should be excluded is quite clear to us. Such people have obviously excluded themselves from the Jewish people. But why should it be that Mechalel Shabbat b'farhesya is excluded from bringing the korbanot? Why is he essentially regarded in the same bracket as the Meshumad and the Menasechet Hayayin? So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says And we'll just look at the end there of the Rashi, two lines from the end. Hi Tana Chamir Le Shabbat Kavodat Kochavim. The reason why this Tana regards Chilul Shabbat as being as awful and as terrible as Avodat Kochavim, the Ha'oved Avodat Kochavim Kofer B'Hakadosh Baruch Hu, because the person who worships idols is rejecting Hakadosh Baruch Hu, V'Hamechalel Shabbat Kofer B'Ma'asav. And likewise, a person who desecrates Shabbat is rejecting and denying the work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who may eat Shekesh Shelo Shabbat HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Maaseh Bereishit, and they are giving false testimony, implying, indicating that they don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested on the seventh day of creation as the culmination of the creation of the world. Shabbat observance is all about testifying and demonstrating our belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu as creator of the world. And a person who doesn't observe Shabbat is thereby stating implicitly that they don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 7 days. However one understands that 7 days, but they're stating that they don't believe that, and therefore they're disassociating themselves with a major tenet of Jewish belief. Let's also look at the Rambam. The Rambam at the very end of Hilchot Shabbat, right at the end of Hilchot Shabbat, he says, "Hashabbat v'avodah zarah kol achat mishtehen shkula kineged shar kol mitzvot haTorah." Both Shabbat and idolatry are equal in severity to all the other mitzvot in the Torah. V'hashabbat hi'ot shebin HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'einenu lo'olam. And Shabbat is an eternal sign between the Almighty and between us. So a person who transgresses any other mitzvah is a wicked Jew. But a person who breaks Shabbat is like oved avodah zarah, is like a person who has committed idolatry, and both the idolater and mechalel Shabbat Faresia could goyim lechol divrehem. They're like Gentiles for all halachic purposes. So we see so far we see the source for this equivalence or for this ruling that mechalel Shabbat has the status of an idolater. The Gemara in Masechet Chulin, there's a similar passage in Masechet Avodah Zarah. And we see that both Rashi and the Rambam are explaining to us that the reason is because Shabbat observance is testimony to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creator of the world. And a person who doesn't observe Shabbat is implying that they're not, they decline to testify that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the creator of the world. So, of course, that is one of our very important points, because it was definitely true in the times of Chazal and the times of the Rishonim as well, that where, you know, almost the whole world was religious in one sense or another, and a person who opted not to observe Shabbat was usually making certainly a person who opted not to observe Shabbat in public was making a theological statement about their belief in God and God's powers and God's actions. The big question is, and this is perhaps the key point in this shiur tonight, is that necessarily true today? Does a contemporary Mechalel Shabbat, has a contemporary Mechalel Shabbat considered the matter in depth and come to the conclusion that they don't believe in the Almighty as creator of the world, and therefore, there's no point in breaking Shabbat, in observing Shabbat? Or are there other reasons why they are breaking Shabbat? And if it's true that there are other reasons why they're breaking Shabbat, then we have to ask ourselves, does that make any difference from a halachic perspective? Maybe we're not Darshinam Tama Dikra. Maybe, you know, even though the facts on the ground have changed, maybe the halacha hasn't changed or shouldn't be applied differently. So I now want to look at a number of acharonim, not in chronological order, but in a thematic order, and to see how they have addressed this this question. You will forgive me, I'm going to be Ashkenazi-centric this evening, in terms of most of the sources I'm citing are Ashkenazim. There are two reasons for this. One is because that's my halachic background, so I'm more familiar with, or overwhelmingly more familiar with, the Ashkenazi halachic tradition rather than the Sephardi halachic tradition. But also because I did try to do some research from a Sephardi halachic perspective. And as I'll mention to you during the course of the year, I could find very limited reference to it in the Sephardi poskim that I'm familiar with. It might be that others discuss it, but to a lesser degree, certainly to a much lesser degree than the Ashkenazim. I suspect that the reason for this is because this wasn't historically, going back 150 years, 200 years, I suspect this wasn't such a problem in Sephardic communities as it was in Ashkenazi communities. Ashkenazi communities in Europe, you know, they were hemorrhaging as far as observance was concerned. We think of the pre-Shoah era as being the golden age of orthodoxy, but that wasn't true. You know, it's, orthodoxy in many places had become a minority pursuit long before that. And even in places where it wasn't a minority pursuit, you know, there was widespread Chilul Shabbat. So I suspect that the situation wasn't as dire in the Sephardi communities as it was in the Ashkenazi communities. But perhaps an expert on Jewish history could tell me whether that theory is correct. So I want to start with the Tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, one of the Gedolei HaPoskim of the Ashkenazi community of the past past couple of generations. Rav Moshe was Nifter in the 1980s, started off life in Russia, but spent most of his years, his productive years in the States. And he addresses this this question, and he makes the observation that I've alluded to already, that contemporary Chilul Shabbat is not a considered act of kafira. It's not a considered act of apostasy or disassociation with core Jewish theology. Let's look at what he says. So his first question is, you know, why do we have this distinction between Chilul Shabbat b'farhesia, public Shabbat desecration, and Chilul Shabbat b'tzina, private Shabbat desecration? And he says, "Gam b'chidushai b'arti b'tam achiluk sheb'shabbat lahachshivo ke'akum bein tzina l'farhesia, shelechara einu muvan, ha'gam b'tzina hu b'oto ha'chomer atzmo sheish b'farhesia, mitzad Shabbat, u'le'inyan kfira, mitzad Shabbat." So he says, as far as the breaking Shabbat is concerned, you know, whether you break Shabbat in public or private, an av malacha is an av malacha. Wherever you do it, you've broken Shabbat. Or the inyan kafira, and as far as denying HaKadosh Baruch is concerned, one could suggest adraba, but sinu yesh katzat yoter kafira, because itim b'rakav dafa ayin tet, b'achiluk ben ganav l'gazlan. He says maybe we could say that doing an avira in private is worse than doing it in public, because there's the implication that if I close my curtains and close my doors, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't see me. And that, of course, is heretical. V'yarti shekevan shadimyon la'aved avodah zarah, hu mitzad shenireh k'kofer. So he says the point is that we're comparing Chilul Shabbat to idolatry, because in both cases, you are being a heretic. So it's only relevant if that's why you're being mechalel Shabbat. But if it's because a person has got challenges, financial challenges, whatever it is, or, you know, they really want to go to the football on Shabbat afternoon, so ein l'hachshivok kofer, that doesn't necessarily turn them into being a kofer. That's the reason why they're breaking Shabbat is just because something else is more exciting or more important to them at this juncture in their lives. But it's not because they are making a conscious decision to reject the notion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as creator. You have to remember that Rav Moshe Feinstein lived on the Lower East Side in New York. It was a well-known phenomena in the first part of the 20th century. People coming from Europe to America, coming from observant lives, finding themselves penniless on the streets of New York, and the only jobs that they could get were jobs which required them to work on Shabbat. Some people were willing to be fired from their job every Monday morning when they came into work because they hadn't been there the previous Saturday. But others, with a family to feed and the like, just felt too challenged by that situation. And against their better feelings, they ended up being mechalel Shabbat. It's possible that Rav Moshe had this in mind as he was writing this tshuva. A person who's come from Europe, from an observant life, who's doing their best to lay tefillin every day, to eat kosher, to send their kids to Talmud Torah after school, etc., etc., and they're working on Shabbat because they feel they have to in order to be able to survive. Do we really want to say that such people are kofrim, that such people are regarded as akum? Obviously not. Therefore, if they're breaking Shabbat but sinner, if they're doing this in private, then we can say it's just lemalot tavato. It's only to because they feel the need to. And even without discussing it with them, if they're essentially, good Jews, however one defines that, then we can assume that that's why they're breaking Shabbat, because something else is more important to them now. The chazin she'af ochel neveilot l'teavon yesh lo kashrut shelo yochal lahachis mishum chashud l'kal lo chashud l'chamor. So we assume, generally speaking, that a person who transgresses in a less severe manner is not going to also transgress in a more severe manner. So he's saying a person who transgresses, breaks Shabbat publicly, even if in their own mind they're not rebelling against Hashem, but the way people perceive it is they're rebelling against Hashem. And therefore, they're regarded as Mechalel Shabbat Faresia, they're regarded as an Akum. But, he says, four lines from the bottom, in came before. He says, here, now, in New York, in the 1950s or 60s, She'adu Asherov Mechalel Shabbat, Hei Mishul Tavat HaMamon. The reason why people break Shabbat is because they want to earn a living. V'yesh HaBesh Sholchim Levet HaKneset Li'Palel. And some, many of them, go to shul on Shabbat morning. And then they go off to work. Efshasha Gamsha Hupafarhesya, Nidonkavitsina, then it's possible that even though they're doing this publicly, we'll regard this as Chilul Shabbat Batsina privately. Shelo Yomru Haro in Klal Shehu Maaseh Kfira. Person who sees them doing this won't say that they are that they're rejecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're being heretical. This person's clearly not a heretic. This person is going to shul on Shabbat morning, davening Shachrit Amidah, Musaf Amidah, and then they're going to work. You can't say that this person, or perhaps you can't say, Rav Moshe says, Esha, perhaps you can't say that this person is a kofer, because at the end of the day, the Gemara was talking about Chilul Shabbat. It's not because intrinsically Chilul Shabbat is worse than anything else. It's because of the theological import associated with Chilul Shabbat. And he says, if that theological import is no longer extant, so then the halakha might not apply. And I'm sure many people are familiar of stories like this. I had a great-grandfather who apparently, when he came to this country, had difficulty finding a job that didn't involve him working on Shabbat. He did work on Shabbat. He always walked to work. During the week, he took the bus to work. On Shabbat, he walked to work. Why did he walk to work? He wanted to observe Shabbat as much as possible. Was he being mechalel Shabbat b'faresia? Undoubtedly, yes. Did he have the status of a kofer? Undoubtedly, no. He was pained by the fact that he had to work on Shabbat. They say that he was knocked down by a horse and killed one Shabbat morning walking to work. In any event, that's a very important starting point from Rav Moshe Feinstein, where he says that contemporary Chilul Shabbat is not an act of kafira. Of course, the facts on the ground today, in many places, are a little bit different to what they were 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago. The phenomena of the shul on Shabbat morning and football Shabbat afternoon is not as prevalent as it once was. And one of these paradoxes in life, you know, when I was a kid, you know, from people were always decrying people who came to shul Shabbat morning and went to the football Shabbat afternoon. And nowadays, in most Orthodox shuls, you don't have that. Far fewer people are going to the football on Shabbat afternoon. Does that mean to say that our standards of orthodoxy have improved? No, I think most of the people who are going to the football on Shabbat afternoon are not going to shul on Shabbat morning. And therein lies the problem. The phenomena, whilst in some places, you know, you do have whole congregations who come to shul Shabbat morning and then drive home. I'm not talking about conservative or reform congregations. I'm talking about orthodox synagogues. But certainly the phenomena of people who regard themselves as in principle committed to Shabbat observance, but in practice not committed to it, is far less than what it once was. Once upon a time, you know, a person broke Shabbat and they felt bad about it because they felt, you know, they ought to be keeping Shabbat. Nowadays, many people break Shabbat and they don't feel bad about it. So are we still able to apply the principle of Rav Moshe that there's no act of kafira here? Maybe there is an act of kafira here. There's saying, no, I really don't, you know, I don't think I need to keep Shabbat. Shabbat's not so important to me. You know, what are their beliefs? You know, can they translate the words that they're saying when they say Vayichul Hashamayim Va'aretz and know that it's a statement of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu as creator of the world? I don't know. So let's leave a question mark there. Let's look at a couple of other ideas. But though Rav Moshe's consideration is shared by a number of authorities. Rav David Zvi Hoffman was one of the last German poskim before the Shoah. He was the last rector of the Hildesheimer Seminary in Berlin, Sorry, he was one, but he was the Rebbe of the Sri Deitcher was the last rector of the Hildesheimer Seminary. But Rav Dan Zvi Hoffman was one of the rectors of the Hildesheimer Seminary, which was the yeshiva university or the Jews' college of pre-war Germany. Was a very important halachic authority in Germany in those difficult years. He died before they were difficult in terms of the Shoah, but they were difficult in terms of Germany as being a center of Reform Judaism and lack of religious observance. And he addresses the question in his Sheilot Tshuvot Melamed L'Hoel, Orachaim Simkaftet, a minyan where you've only got where you've got a couple of people who are Mechallel Shabbat, not just in terms of going to work. They also smoke their pipes or light their cigarettes. And they don't make Kiddush or Havdalah. Can you count them towards the minyan? So this is a bit different to what Rav Moshe was saying. Rav Moshe was talking about people who perhaps tried to limit their Shabbat desecration and came to shul, etc., etc. These people, seems they're coming to shul on Shabbat morning, but they don't go home and make Kiddush. Can you count them? So he says, "Od snifla keldu is my name lo mikre mechallel Shabbat b'farhesya." One of the reasons why we can say that perhaps they're not mechallel Shabbat b'farhesya, kevan sherubano simkein, seeing as most people, most Jews aren't observant, he's saying, "Devishlema im rov Yisrael zaka'in." It's true if most Jewish people are observant, who ma'atim izim p'neim la'asot isur zeh. Harehu kofer b'torah v'oseh to'eva b'yad ramah. Most Jews are observant, and a few people say, "I can't be bothered with this." Then they're waving a red flag and saying, "I don't believe in any of this." Uporei shatzmo miklal Yisrael, and they're disassociating themselves with the Jewish religious community. Aval kevan davo v'avonotenu harabim ruban portim hageder. Seeing as now most people aren't observant. Takanatam kilkalatam. In actual fact, that sort of solves our problem, because hayachid choshev shein ze aveira gedola kol kach. People think it's not such a big issue. Ve'ein tarach la'asot b'tzina. You can break Shabbat publicly, and that doesn't stop you being Jewish. U'parashyal shelok b'tzina. Vadraba hayireim kruim bismanein purushim u'mvzalim. If you're from, you're thought of being a meshugana, and if you're not from, to use Ashkenazi terminology. So then, that's the way everybody does it. So Rav David Zvi Hoffman is saying that paradoxically, widespread Chilul Shabbat actually addresses our problems. When overwhelmingly people are Shabbat observant, then a person who's not Shabbat observant, breaks Shabbat. That's an act of rebellion. But where most people don't keep Shabbat, then people don't realize that it's so important. You have contemporary issues, nowadays, even, in Orthodox communities. I don't want to, go into any details, but you've got certain things which, are observed more in the breach, honored more in the breach than the observance thereof. And people don't think there's anything terribly wrong with it. And that's the situation with Chilul Shabbat as well, says Rav David Zvi Hoffman, that a person doesn't think that it's such a terrible thing, and therefore we should perhaps not regard it as being Mechallel Shabbat b'farhesya. We'll come back momentarily to the Binyan Sion. I want to skip to Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, one of the great Ashkenazi halachists of the 18th century and early 19th century. He addresses the shocking situation. We tend to think sort of sometimes now, as I said earlier on, in back in the old days, everything was was wonderful, and it's only now that we face these problems. He talks about the case of a mohel who was mechallel Shabbat b'farhesya. So I think I got lost there, but I'm back with you. Is everybody here? Anybody here? Yes, we're all here. Amorhel, who was, can you hear me? No, I'm here. Sorry, I'm here. Sorry, got muted there, not sure how. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva Eiger discusses the case of Amorhel, who was with Mechalel Shabbat Befar Hesia. And he's great, Moel, and everybody wants him to be the Moel for their children. You know, if this were to happen in London today, you know, he'd be chased out of town. Nobody would let him, you know, no Orthodox community would let him act as a Moel. But Rabbi Akiva Eiger, 250 years ago, was dealing with this situation. And he's asked the question, you know, how should we regard such a Moel? Should we regard it as if this Brit Mila has been done by an Akum, in which case it's certainly not allowed to do such a Brit Mila, and there's a question whether you would need Hatafat Dam Brit, drawing a drop of blood afterwards if such a Brit had been done. And he makes the interesting observation again that the problem sort of solves itself. He makes the observation, he suggests that there's ground to say that you're not regarded as a Mechalel Shabbat b'Parhesya unless you do it in Parhesya of 10 observant Jews. In terms of it's not regarded as being public unless it's done in the presence of 10 observant Jews. People might know about it, but it needs to be people who are kosher to give Eidut, who could come to court and say, you know, we saw Pliny Almoni breaking Shabbat. So see, if you've got widespread Chilul Shabbat, this person is never Mechalel Shabbat in the presence of 10 observant Jews, then in actual fact, it might be, you know, because everybody's Mechalel Shabbat, so then you kind of solve the problem again because everybody's Mechalel Shabbat, and therefore he hasn't done it in the presence of ten observant Jews. So if you think about the Jew who lives in Limerick, you've got three Jews living in Limerick in Ireland, or in somewhere else in the middle of nowhere. So you've even got 10 Jews or 100 Jews. You know, very often in these out of town communities, you might have a reasonable sized Jewish community, but really only two or three people who are observant. Everybody else is breaking Shabbat. They're never breaking Shabbat in the presence of 10 observant Jews. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says that he's approaching it from a very different perspective to Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav David Zvi Hoffman. They were addressing it from a theological perspective. He's addressing it from a technical perspective. He's saying that I don't know what this person's theology is. I'm not even getting into theology. I don't know how interested Rabbi Akiva Eiger was in theology, to be honest. But I'm looking from a technical halachic perspective. Is this, you know, if this person, you know, was called on to be, you know, Mekadesh Shem Shamayim Barabim, okay, that has to be done in the presence of 10 Jews. You wouldn't have to give up your life because there aren't 10 observant Jews. Likewise, a person who is Mechalel Shabbat only in the presence of non-Orthodox Jews then isn't regarded as Mechalel Shabbat Afar Hesia. Again, the realities on the ground today might be, you know, Northwest London might be different to Limerick or to Nashville, Tennessee, but it's an important principle to be aware of. Chief Rabbi Uziel, Rishon Zion, in Israel, in Mishpatei Uziel, Krach Gimel, Or Chaim Siman Nun Vav, he takes issue with this. He says that that's not true. It's only true in certain cases that you need to have 10 people who are Shabbat observant to make the others regarded as being Befarhesia. But as far as this is concerned, as far as Mechalel Shabbat is concerned, you don't need it to be in the presence of 10 people who are Shomrei Shabbat, and he doesn't accept the contention of the Nod Abihuda. Let's now go back to the contention of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Let's go now back to the Binyan Sion. The Binyan Sion was also one of the very important German poskim, Rabbi Yaakov Etzlinger, who lived in the first part of the 19th century, and he addressed this question also because he was stuck. You know, lots of people showing up to shul without, but not being Shomrei Shabbat, and he says we've got two things that we can consider here. One is, as we've mentioned previously, you know, they are making kiddush and Havdalah and saying tefillot, in which case they're clearly not kofrim, they're clearly not denying the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his role in the world. As I've said, whether or not that would apply in a contemporary context, I don't know. But his first consideration is very, very important. His first consideration is, it says, he says it contemporary Mechalalei Shabbat, and this is going back 200 years. Lo yadana ma don bahem. I don't know what to do about it. Achashe bavonotinu harabim pastaha baheret larov, adshe berubam chilul Shabbat naseh kehete. Most people who are Mechalal Shabbat, they don't even think there's anything wrong with it. Unless we say that maybe we're giving them the status of Omer Mutar. Omer Mutar is a halachic concept, which means person believes what they're doing is correct. That's why they're doing it, not because they're rejecting anything. They just think that this is permissible. They haven't learned enough to know that what they're doing is wrong. Shirak Harov Lemezitu. That's not regarded as being quite as bad as deliberately doing an aveira. V'yesh b'hem shemipalim tefillat Shabbat v'mikadshim hayom kiddush hayom v'achachach mechalim Shabbat b'mlachot doraita d'rabanan. And then, you know, some of these people, they go to shul, make kiddush, and then a mechal al Shabbat in various ways, and their children grow up like that as well. And if we look in the middle of the paragraph, he says that it's very possible that Delonech Shavu Kamumrim, Afapi Shemachalun Shabbat, it's very possible they're not regarded as apostates, even though they break Shabbat, because they're just behaving in the way that they were poorly educated to behave. And then they've got the status of being tinok shenishba, a child that was taken captive by Gentiles and grew up without knowing anything about Shabbat at all. And that's one of the issues here. He's saying this very important notion. He's saying such a person is breaking Shabbat. Tinok shenishba bein hagoyim has got the status of a Jew, even though they've never kept Shabbat their entire life. Why have they got the status of a Jew? Because they never knew that it was wrong. Now, this is quite a brave approach, a radical approach to say that a person who has grown up in a Jewish home, perhaps with a mezuzah on the door and going to shul on Shabbat, knows that they're Jewish, and has gone to Hebrew classes and learned about keeping Shabbat, is still regarded as Tinok Shenishba al-Bein HaGoyim, is still regarded as being a person who's not had a Jewish education and knows nothing about it. But the point that he's making, the notion that he's creating, is that in actual fact, we can apply the principle, we can say, listen, does the person know that what they're doing is really so terrible? And if they don't, then perhaps we shouldn't regard them as being Mechalel Shabbat Befar Hesia. Even though technically that's what they're doing, halachically we shouldn't regard them as such. That's the view of the Binyan Sion, Rabbi Yaakov Etzlinger. It was then repeated and amplified by the Chazon Ish in the early part of the 20th century. He says that, it's not so straightforward. He says you've got to address each case on its own merits or demerits. Sometimes, you know, a person who's been brought up, you know, it won't apply to a person who's had a good Jewish education and then gone off the derech. But in some cases, that it will apply. So that's a very important shita there of the Binyan Sion and the Chazon Ish, that Tinok Shenishba can be applied here. The Mishnah Brura in Simon Shin Pei Hei, based on the Chai Adam, also mentions that in actual fact, it could be that a person who won't be Mechalel Shabbat in front of an Adam Gadol, in front of a rabbi, you know, isn't regarded as Mechalel Shabbat Befar Hesia, because, again, it's showing that they feel uncomfortable about what they're doing. They realize it's not right. But again, you know, in many instances that I've had, you know, when I was rabbi in more outlying communities, I would have, you know, members who drove to shul on Shabbat, drove home after the service, and if they saw me walking home and they're driving, they would wave to me from their cars. There were others, of course, who, you know, pulled their coats up over their heads so that I wouldn't see them. So the ones who pulled their coats up over their heads so they wouldn't be seen by the rabbi, maybe wouldn't be regarded as Mechalel Shabbat Befar Hesia. Those who wave, we'd need to find another reason to say they're not Mechalel Shabbat Befar Hesia, maybe because of the Tinok Shenishba. To conclude, I want to bring to your attention Tshuva of Rav Osha Weiss, Ibn Chatasher, Chelek Aleph Simen Yud, where he discusses this this very question, status of Mechalel Shabbat in a contemporary context. And he addresses the fact that perhaps the facts on the ground are a bit different to what they were 250 years ago in the times of the Binyan Sion, or 100 years ago when, or 80 years ago when Rav Moshe Feinstein was writing. And so some people say, listen, you know, take contemporary Israel. You know, most Israelis, they know about Shabbat. You know, they know you're not supposed to drive on Shabbat. You know, there's plenty of information about that. How can you say that they've got the status of Tinok Shenishba Levein Hagoyim? And he says, again, Takanatam Kalkalatam, he says, yeah, you know, it's all about PR. And it's true, there's lots of information about out there in the media about the importance of keeping Shabbat, but there's also lots of negative publicity about orthodoxy. Orthodoxy doesn't always get a good press as far as PR is concerned. And, you know, just people don't think that this is something they need to do. If you look at his final line, he says, you know, you can have a person who knows that, yeah, you know, there's a mitzvah not to break Shabbat. They need to recognize its importance. If people have been brought up in an environment where, you know, Shabbat observance is, you know, something which some people like to do and some people don't like to do, but it's not binding on everybody, then, you know, they're Tinok Shenishba Levein Hagoyim and the Rishon Lezion, Harav Yitzchak Yosef in Sheilot and Shavod Rishon Lezion, Chelek Arasim Kafav. He says that we can rely on the Chazon Ish, and it's interesting in his tshuva on the subject, and Harav Ovadia also has a tshuva in Yabia Omer discussing this topic in context of Shechita. I think it's Yabia Omer Chelek Aleph Yoreder Simen Yud Aleph. Neither of them quote a lot of Sfardi authorities. It's kind of interesting. They build their theses on the Ashkenazi poskim. I think it's not an issue that, as I said earlier, I think it's not an issue that was really addressed by the Sfardim, because it wasn't such a big issue for them. Or it was easier for them just to say, listen, you know, we can still put our foot down and insist that people keep Shabbat at least as much as possible. It was a much more traditional community for much longer. He says, You know, nowadays, you know, we can't live Judaism like we would like to. The Gam Rabim Miposhim and Mushpa'im Mehikshoret HaChilonit. And lots of people are influenced by the Chiloni media. Sheish Mehem Shekotvim Divrei Kfira Zilzul B'Gdolei HaTorah Pritzut V'Hasatah Neged Kol Davar Shebikdusha. You know, the Chiloni media, you know, really is to the detriment of Torah belief and Torah observance. And therefore, you know, we can still say that people have the status of Tinok Shenishba. So what I've tried to do this evening is to show the reaction and the response of a number of poskim who recognized a change in circumstances and recognized that it was necessary to apply the halakha in a different way, not to be mechadesh the halakha or not to ignore a halakha, but to apply various halakhic principles. And I think they were motivated by circumstances. I've presented a very one-sided perspective on this. I'll be honest, because I want Mechallelei Shabbat to feel they have a place in Klal Yisrael. I don't want people to be Mechallel Shabbat, but I want a person who is not currently observant to feel that they have a space in the observant community, and Be'ezrat Hashem, they will grow in that space. Other poskim, for example, the Chatam Sofer and Ud'ime, again, when they were fighting very fiercely to stop Chilul Shabbat, they took a very different attitude to this. And I think I could give another share another time on the status of the Mechallelei Shabbat and come to a totally different conclusion. But that's not the conclusion that I want to come to. Because I think that we need to reach out for the good of the people, the good of the people as individuals, and the good of Klal Yisrael to be able to regard these people as Jews and Shayach to our communities. So you know, that's, I think, you know, sometimes, as I said, it's the end game which one has in sight. If it's not defensible from a halakhic perspective, then you can have whatever end game you want. But in some instances, it is defensible. And I think it could be that if one lives in Bnei Brak and finds one Mechallel Shabbat who won't respond to words of admonition or to a welcoming arm, that it's correct to let them know that they'll be regarded as an akum l'chol davar. But I think in the in the broader communities that we find ourselves, I think the best way to move towards increased observance of Shabbat is by being mekarev rather than being merachik. And I hope I've managed to present this evening halachic grounds that we can indeed be makariv. Thank you so much.